graduated from high school. I went to a very dysfunctional church. God was my first love, but I decided that my only choices in life were to be unhappy as a layperson or miserable as a pastor. So I decided to opt for unhappiness, and I made my way through to Georgetown University, where I got my doctorate and became a politics professor, because my passion in life is the intersection of Christ and this world. And it was only after that that I was finally mature enough probably to be a pastor.
Yeah, so you're a pastor as well. That seems like a strange mix. How did that come about?
It is a strange mix, and God has given me the gift of shrinking churches, I think. But it's not actually that strange a mix. Jesus Christ is passionate about all of life, and what I've learned in my study of politics is that if Christ didn't come, we're dead. And I've also learned that whether I like the church or not, despite all of its blemishes, despite its failings, despite the inadequacies, despite the sin, the church is God's avenue to do his will in this world. And I realized I needed to get with the program.
So when you're not being a politics professor and teaching students and you're not pastoring a church, what interests you? What lights your candles?
I love ice hockey. I grew up in Minnesota in the United States, which is the Siberia of America. And I grew up playing ice hockey 6 weeks, months a year. And I played through college. And I still play in an old man's hockey league in Manchester once a week, which is why I don't walk so well.
Terrific. Well, Dale, we're really privileged to have you here. Thanks for flying all this way to speak
Absolutely.
To us.
Absolutely.
Guys, would you welcome Dale as he speaks to us?
Thank you. I was wondering why you were bringing somebody from such a long way to speak to you about things, all things pertaining to being men, but I just went to the bathroom and discovered that you all have decided to go in the ladies' room. And so I thought, I can see why you got me. No, I'm delighted to be here. At home, we have something called Mother's Day, and I'm guessing that you have Mother's Day as well. And on Mother's Day, it's this day of phenomenal celebration. And it's a day in which every mother is celebrated, other mother feels good, and it's actually probably one of the high holy days of the year. And as a pastor, probably one of the only concerns is to, on the one hand, celebrate mothers, but to recognize the pain that exists for those that aren't able to have children. On Father's Day, it seems to be a day that, whereas on Mother's Day, the message is, you guys are great. On Father's Day, the message seems to be, well, hopefully you can do a little bit better next year, but we'll still celebrate you anyway. And it strikes me that that experience is one that seems to exist wherever I go in the world. And I find that women seem to have great confidence in who they are, more and more confidence in who they are. And I think the more I travel in this world, the more I realize that there's less and less confidence when it comes to men. I think part of that is because the culture is changing dramatically. I think there's lots of reasons for that, and I hope we can get into some of it tonight, and we'll get into a lot of it tomorrow. I had cancer several years ago, and as a result of that, I only have one vocal cord, so you'll see me drinking water. It's not to be cool or distracting. It just simply is what it is in order for me to speak well. What does it mean to be a man? What does it mean to be a man? I mean, we clearly saw some images on the screen. We saw an image of some guy who's particularly good at listening to women. Is that what it means to be a man? We saw another guy who looks to be in better shape than me, with diamonds and horses and all the rest. Is that what it means to be a man? Does it mean to be a man? Does it mean that you need to be financially successful? So that those of you in this room who are the most financially successful and have run most of your own businesses, are you Are you the man? Does it mean to be a man to be one who spends a lot of time working at church? Does it mean to be a man to be some person who doesn't cheat on a spouse? Does it mean to be a man that's somebody that's home a couple days a week and who'll chop the shed with the motorized lawnmower if necessary? If you're not any of those things, are you any less of a man? If you're not brawny, you don't play ice hockey, if you don't enjoy AFL and all the other things like that, are you any less of a man? If you're somebody who enjoys ballet, are you a man? One of the things that cancer did to me is that it took away my pituitary. So I'm not someone who is able to manufacture testosterone anymore. Does that mean I'm not a man? For those of you that have hair, for those of you that don't, what does it mean to be a man? I think our culture gives us lots of different impressions. I think our culture is telling us what it means to be a man. I think our culture is in great confusion because it tells us that if we don't fit a certain image of what it means to be a man, then perhaps we're not a man. And perhaps we ought to think about an alternative to being a man. Well, I believe that what it means to be a man is to be made in the image of God, male, and loved by God, and that what it means to be a man is to do the will of our Father in heaven. And that what it means to be a man, to do the will of our Father in heaven, is holy work, it's hard work, it's important work, and it really doesn't matter if you're strong and brawny, if you're weak, if you're somebody whose inclinations tend to be socially inclinations that people think about women, none of that matters. The question is, are you willing to step up and to be the man, to be the person that God called you to be? It's not easy to become the person that God called you to be. In the book of Numbers, there's a story about how Moses was told to send some spies into the land of Canaan to try to make a decision about whether to invade. And when they came back, Moses and Aaron and the whole Israelite community gathered in the desert of Paran. There they reported to them and to the whole assembly and showed them the fruit of the land. They gave Moses this account. "We went into the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey, and here is the fruit. But the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified, and they're very large. We even saw descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites live in the Negev. The Hittites, the Jebusites, the Amorites live in the hill country. The Canaanites lived near the sea along the Jordan." Then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, "We should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We can't attack these people. They're stronger than we are." And they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land that they had explored. They said, "The land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there are of great size. We saw the Nephilim there, the descendants of Anak who come from Nephilim. We seem like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we look to be the same as them." What does it mean to be a man? What it means to be a man is to do the work that our Father in heaven has given us to do. And I think the question that I want to ask each of you, and the question I want to ask myself, and I think the question that God has put before us, is that we live in a sinful land. We live in a land that has priorities that are different from God's. As I say those words, I'm primarily speaking about the United States, because you don't really need somebody from the United States coming and telling you what to do, even though we do that very well. But I think the point is well taken. It's really unimportant how wealthy you are. It's really unimportant how successful you are in business. It's really unimportant about how you have navigated your way in the world. It's unimportant about how strong you are, how much testosterone you have. The question is, are you willing to do what God has put in front of you to do? And as you look at your life this past week, if you look at this life your past year, as you've looked at the things, the challenges that have come your way, that you realize are challenges that are not human, but spiritual, but all very physical, how have you done? In the book of Deuteronomy, it says, "The Lord your God commands you this day to follow these decrees and laws and carefully observe them all with your heart and all with your soul. You have declared this day that the Lord is your God and that you will walk in his ways, that you will keep his decrees, commands and laws, and that you will obey him. And the Lord has declared this day that you are his people, his treasured possessions, as he promised, and that you are to keep all of his commands. He has declared that he will set you in praise, fame, and honor high above the nations he has made, and that you will be a people holy to the Lord your God, as he promised." What is it being to be a man? If what you're expecting tonight and if what you're expecting tomorrow is that I will come in here and unlock the mysteries of what it is to be masculine, that will not be the case. You'll have to go to somebody else for that. I think that the scripture has an understanding of what it is to be the man. I'm going to explain what I perceive it to be. I think that it was understood when the people received this word what it meant to be a man. And I think that we live in a time right now when it's extraordinarily complicated. But it really isn't that complicated. We live in a time right now in which we are told that gender, the meaning of what it is to be male and female, is socially constructed. We're told that what it means to be male, what it means to be female, is something that has come down to us from generations, that there are certain attitudes that have come to us, that the reason why girls play with dolls is not because they're attracted to dolls, but because they've been conditioned that way. And the same goes for men with kicking balls and destroying this and that. And the implication is that if you're a young man and you play with dolls and you're a young girl and you destroy things, there must be something wrong with you. We live in a day in which we are coming to a place when we really don't think in any meaningful way about what it means to be male and what it means to be female. Indeed, it probably won't be too many more years before you advertise having a men's conference and you'll get some very dark stares from a lot of different powerful people about why you would be such a sexist group, so as to suppose that there's anything unique about being a man. We live in a society that is becoming focused on we are persons. We are no longer male and female made in the image of God. We are persons. If any of you are working in the insurance industry, any of you working in large corporations, you recognize that you will be asked to be making decisions shortly on whether or not you are going to cover employees that consider themselves to be GLBT. You'll be asked to decide whether or not it's the understanding of what it is to be male and female in a biblical sense, that if your culture decides that that's no longer valid, you'll be asked to choose. And what will you do? That challenge won't be merely for the people in corporations doing insurance, CEOs, etc., that'll be the decision that'll have to be made by school teachers. I live in a state in which we no longer have men and women, we have persons. I may have joked at the very beginning of the talk tonight, about the fact that we're going to the bathroom in the women's room. But in New Hampshire, when you go to the bathroom, you actually have no idea what you're going to be in, who you're going to be in the bathroom with. Because the way the law reads, that if you are a female but you understand yourself to be a man, you can go to the men's room. If you're male and you understand yourself to be a female, you can go in the women's room. I live in the first state in the United States that voted to legalize same-sex marriage. We've had that for 3 straight years. The teachers in our schools are asked to communicate the message to each one of our students that it's their choice what they decide to become, and that whatever they decide to become, we're going to endorse. As a pastor, I'm being asked by 14-year-old men, 14-year-old boys, and 14-year-old girls, whether they're male or female, whether they're bi, gay, lesbian. When I was a child, I didn't actually want to talk to my pastor about sex. I didn't want my pastor to talk to me about sex. And now I'm asked to counsel young people who are trying to figure out who they are. You know, the questions that we're talking about this weekend are really important. What does it mean to be a man? In the book of Genesis, it says that we are made in the image of God. God said, let us, God, the Trinity, let us make man in our image. Male and female, he made them. You are a man if God made you and you were born a man. And if you were born a woman, you are a woman. And except in the very, very, very few cases where biologically it's not clear whether you're male or female, the reality is it's very clear. And so if you're asking the question tonight whether you're really a man, unless you're in an incredible disguise, we're all men. We are all men. And we have a job to do. We have a responsibility. And it falls to all of us. It falls to all of us, no matter what our body size is. It falls to all of us, no matter how much hair we have. It falls to all of us, whether we are strong, whether we are weak. It falls to all of us. We are men. So how do we differ from women? We live in a culture that tells us that for the most part, there really is no meaningful difference between male and female. We may joke about that. I think that we live in a culture right now in which the only people that really don't know who they are straight men. I teach at a university in the United States, and when I started at that university in the United States about 20 years ago, the top 70% of the graduating class every single year were men. There was only 30% women in the top graduating class. For the last 6 straight years, the top 70% of people in the graduating class have been women. And the bottom 70% were men. Why? Because I think men are losing confidence that they know what it is to be male. The images in the media that we get of being a man are usually rather dumb. We're laughed at. We're probably in the television commercials. If your beer commercials are anything like us, we are the people that are whatever a woman asks us to do, whatever a woman wears, we are powerless. We're the dumb ones. It seems that everybody else is celebrated but men. And if that's the way that we feel tonight, it's time to get over it. Because the truth is, we're men, we're made in the image of God, and we are asked by God to live for Him as men. We're not women, we're men. What are some things that we learn about biology, about differences between men and women? Despite what our culture tells us, there are differences. The most fundamental difference is that from the very moment that a male is conceived in the womb, compared to a female conceived in the womb, the cell division is different. That from the very moment of conception, the cell division of a male is different than a cell division of a female. And so the truth of the matter is that men and women are very distinct. Men and women are very distinct. Now, is it the case that we may have similar personality traits? Sure. Because we're not only male and female, we're both made in the image of God. So yes, we have certain personality traits that we share. In fact, we share many things with women because we're made in the image of God. But there are some specific things that we are unique with. Then the very nature of what it is to be a woman, women have babies. And despite the efforts of scientists in our worlds, we have not yet been able to invent men having babies. But you can be sure that they are trying, because they are. And what we learn is that when a woman conceives a child, from the very moment of conception, there is a connection between that child and that mother, and that connection is biological, there's a hormonal connection, and then there's an emotional connection. And there's a big difference between a relationship between a child and a mother and a child as a father. And it's not because men are bad. It's simply because women have babies and men don't. And so the relationship between mother and child has been a special relationship, and that exists and continues to exist and will continue to exist. And ways in which we see that played out in our world is that when divorces happen, women often get the custody. And whether the men like it or not, the court tends to grant it. And in the world in which we live, it's usually men that abandon the children. It tends not to be women abandoning the children, though, of course, that happens sometimes as well. And if you've ever been in a discussion with a woman, you may find yourself in a situation where you didn't understand what was going on. Because they are finding themselves in a situation where they don't understand what's going on. In the United States, American football is a big deal. So I had a bunch of men, invited them over one night to watch the big rivalry that exists in our region of the country, the New England Patriots versus the New York Jets. And we watched the game. There was probably 13 of us. The next morning, Rachel comes down, my wife, she comes down to breakfast, and she asks the question, "I am sorry that you guys didn't have any fun last night." I said, "Well, what are you talking about?" "Well, you guys didn't talk to each other." "We had a blast." And for the next week, I'd see some of these guys, and they'd come up to me with Rachel present, and they'd say, "That was so much fun. We got to do that again." And she'd look at me and she'd say, "I just don't get it." We learned that in the womb, that if you're a male, you have more testosterone than a female. And that when our brains develop, there's synapses that connect both sides of our brain. And there's a lot of research that's being done about the differences between men and women in terms of brain, in terms of all sorts of things. And one of the studies points out that testosterone dissolves some of these synapses. And so that the reality is that women have more connections between the two sides of their brain than men. Is that true for all of us? No. But it is pretty much true. When I first started teaching, people came in to me and critiqued my teaching because when I would ask a question, invariably a man would answer first, and I would go on with the discussion, and I was critiqued as being sexist because I wasn't letting the women speak. And I was told that I needed to leave more time because women needed more time to formulate an answer to a question. Now, that may be true, generally true among women, although Rachel doesn't seem to have that problem. But in fact, it is true. Then that for many decades, if not centuries, it was understood that women were dumber than men. And that one of the reasons, perhaps, that they were dumber than men is that men were quicker with a response. Well, it may in fact be the case that the reason why women take longer to respond is that they're capable of doing far more integrated thinking between the two sides of their brain. And that when they formulate a response, it's a much more integrated response than a male response. And this may explain why it is that women seem to have the ability to integrate intellect and emotion in a way that's superior to men. Because men often report that if they're in a discussion with a woman, that it gets emotional, they're dead. They can't hold their own. They can't seem to think fast enough. A woman asks, "Do you love me?" And the man's trying to think. What do I say? What does this mean? And you don't respond very quickly. And tears start to come. What does it mean to be a man? It means to be a male, made in the image of God, and a man who obeys God. The Israelites were commanded to listen to the law, to keep the law, to teach their law, teach the law to their children. And when it was time to go into the promised land, the Israelites were commanded that they were to go into the land and they were to drive out the inhabitants of the land. In Judges chapter 1, after the death of Joshua, the Israelites asked the Lord, "Who will be the first to go up and fight for us against the Canaanites?" And the Lord answered, "Judah is to go. I have given the land into their hands." Then the men of Judah said to the Simeonites, their brothers, "Come up with us into the territories allotted to us to fight against the Canaanites. We in turn will go with you into yours." So the Simeonites went with them. What's wrong with that passage? God asked Judah to go do this. And the men of Judah decided that they wanted help, so they asked the men of Simeon to do it. The men of Manasseh were asked to go in and to drive out the Canaanites in their land, and the story continues. But Manasseh did not drive out the people of Bethshan or Tanakh or Tor or Ibleam or Megiddo and their surrounding settlements, for the Canaanites were determined to live in that land. When Israel later became stronger, they pressed the Canaanites into forced labor, but they never drove them out completely. Nor did Ephraim drive out the Canaanites living in Gezer, but the Canaanites continued to live there among them. Neither did Zebulun drive out the Canaanites who lived in Kidron or Naahal, who remained among them, but they did subject them to forced labor. Nor did Asher drive out those living in Anako or Sidon or Aleb or Asib or Helb. I can't say. Neither did Naphtali drive out those living in Beth Shemesh or Beth Anath. But the Naphtalites too lived among the Canaanite inhabitants of the land. And those living in Beth Shemesh and Beth Anath became forced laborers for them. The Amorites confined the Danites to the hill country, not allowing them to come down into the plain. And the Amorites were determined also to hold out in Mount Heres and Ajalon and Shalbim. But when the power of the house of Joseph increased, they too were pressed into forced labor. So in short, the men of Israel were commanded to do a task by God, and they didn't. What is it that you've been asked to do? What is it that we have been asked to do? Have we been asked by our God to become wealthy? Have we been asked by our God to become powerful? Have we been asked by our God to become nice? Have we been asked by our God to get along? Have we been asked by our God to compromise the way in which we live so that we don't stand out among the others that are around us? Have we been asked by our God to go easy on sin so as not to offend those around us? If you've spent a lot of time trying to think about what it means to be a man, and if you've been obsessed with sexual attraction, or you've been obsessed with sexuality of this, or you've been obsessed with how your body looks, or you've been obsessed with the amount of money that you have, you've been obsessed with the amount of power that you get, you've been obsessed with whether or not you're good, I think what God asks us to be obsessed with is whether we're obedient. That our God has asked us to live in a way that he desires, and he's asked us to live for a purpose, because we are his men, made in his image. We are here to glorify the God, our Father, and we live in a land that is sinful, and we live in a land that does not honor God, and we live in a land that is about to descend into great decadence. And in saying about to descend into great decadence, you may assume that I'm speaking exclusively of the issue of same-sex marriage, etc., and that would not be the case. That is certainly decadence. But a land in which the idols are money is decadence. A land in which the idols are athletic is decadence. The land in which there are any idols, the land in which there is any God other than God, is a decadent land. It does not matter how strong you are, and it does not matter how much testosterone you have, because the battles that the Lord are calling us to enter into are not battles that we can win on our own. And if you look around, if you look at yourself, if you look at the people that you are asked to go into battle with, and you determine that there is no hope, that you do not have a chance to win, that the other people are smarter, the other people are brighter, the other people make you look stupid in a debate, and the other people have a big bark, you'd be correct. The battle will not be won by the strongest. The battle will not be won by the mightiest. The battle will be won by our God. Our God does not ask us to win the battle. He asks us to go into the battle. In chapter 4 of Judges, after Ehud died, the Israelites once again did evil in the eyes of the Lord. So the Lord sold them into the hands of Jabin, a king in Canaan, who reigned in Hazor. The commander of the army was Sisera, who lived in Harosheth Hagim, because he had 900 iron chariots and had cruelly oppressed the Israelites for 20 years. And after those 20 years, they cried out to the Lord for help. There are some who think that women are supposed to stay home, be barefoot and pregnant, that they have no place of significance in this world. But I think that after all of the passages and chapters that we've read so far, and God, who never actually said the men were strong enough to do what was going to be done, because it was he that was going to be done, decided to embarrass them. And he called up a prophetess named Deborah. She held court under the palm of Deborah between Ramah and Bethel in the hill country of Ephraim. And the Israelites came to her to have their disputes decided. She sent for Barak, son of Abinadab, from Kedesh in Naphtali, and said to him, "The Lord, the God of Israel, commands you, go take with you 10,000 men of Naphtali and Zebulun, and lead the way to Mount Tabor. I will lure Sisera, the commander of Jabin's army, with his chariots and troops to the Kishon River and give them into your hands." And Barak said to her, "If you don't go with me, I won't go." "Very well," Deborah said, "I will go with you. But because of the way you are going about this, the honor will not be yours. For the Lord will hand Sisera over to a woman." And to run fast forward in the story, because it's one of my favorite passages in the entire scripture, because I like action movies. Jael went out to meet Sisera and said to him, "Come, my lord, come right in." Jael's a woman. "Don't be afraid." So he entered the tent and she put a covering over him. "I'm thirsty," he said. "Please give me some water." And she opened a skin of milk and gave him a drink and covered him up. "Stand in the doorway of the tent," he told her. "If someone comes by and asks you, is anyone here? Say no." But Jael, Heber's wife, picked up a tent peg and a hammer and went quietly to him while he lay fast asleep, exhausted. And she drove the peg through his head into the ground, and he died. There are men and there are women. If men won't play their role, God won't have any problem winning with women. Because it isn't strength that God needs, it's obedience. It isn't strength that God needs, but it's courage. It isn't testosterone that God needs, but it's a willingness to die. And the question for us this weekend is, are we going to be willing to be men who are obedient to God, who will go into this world and do the things that men are being asked to do? Now, if you're sitting there with a bit of confusion wondering what it is that a man is supposed to do, we're supposed to be obedient. If you want to know beyond that what that means, after the fall of the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve were kicked out of the garden. And as far as we can tell, in the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve did not have a power struggle. They didn't seem to have fights. They seemed to be able to get along. It isn't the case that because Adam was stronger that he oppressed Eve or raped Eve or did anything like that. They lived in an environment of love. Because we are made to love the Lord our God with all our hearts, our mind, and our soul, and love our neighbor as ourselves. But when Adam and Eve got kicked out of the garden, we no longer lived in a world of love. When Adam and Eve got kicked out of the Garden of Eden, we now lived in a world of power. And we still live in that world today. On this side of heaven, between now and when Jesus Christ comes again, the reality is in the world in which we live, power is the currency of the day. And that might makes right, and that power is the way that decisions are made. And as the way in which God made us, whether we like it or not, the reality is that men are stronger than women for the most part. Not necessarily craftier, not necessarily smarter, but we are stronger. And from the very moment that we were kicked out of the Garden of Eden, men have been asked to keep an eye over the women. Men have been asked to keep an eye over their families. Men have been asked to keep an eye over children. And we have been asked to do that because we are men and we have power. And that one of the purposes of being a man is to create a world that is safe for our women and safe for our children. And if you thought that you were coming here tonight to get a lecture on fatherhood, the reality is that this applies to all of us. We are here to make the world safe for the poor and the vulnerable, the widows and the orphans, women and children, and if we are married, our wives and children. But whether we're married or not, and whether the wives and children we're talking about may not be our own, we are here to do that. And so one of the things that we are asked to do is to make this world, to make this church, to make this world safe for those that don't have power. How are we doing? There's a lot of women in this world like Deborah who have quite a bit of courage. There's a lot of women in this world like Sisera who are willing to take up a tent peg and drive it into a man's temple in order to save a nation. You guys have what it takes. You guys know what to do. It's time to do it. It's the job of men of God to not only make the church, but the world safe for women and children. It's the job of the men of God to make this a just place. It's the job of the men of God to make this a fair place. It's the job of the men of God to make sure that the least of these are cared for. This is not a command that I'm giving. This is not a command of political correctness. This is a command that's repeated throughout the scripture. That God has special concern for the weak and the powerless, and that Jesus, when he comes, he judges whether or not you've come to visit the people in prison. He judges whether or not you've taken care of the poor and the weak and those that were without. That's what he wants to know. Is it the case that women have no responsibility in this regard whatsoever? The answer would be, of course they do. But there's some unique job that a woman has, and that certainly extends to the caring of children. Does that mean that men have no responsibility to care for children? I would submit we have a very special responsibility to care for children. And what it means to be a man and caring for children is that we are to care for children whether or not we have the same special bond that a woman has with a child. In fact, what it means to be a man is to care for a child because it's the right thing to do. And that what it means to be a man is to care for a child whether we feel like it or not. And if we father a child, what it means to be a parent is to care for that child for every single day that we are alive, and that we are to give to that child, to teach the law to that child, to teach the way of the world to that child, and to protect that child. And that just because some of us don't feel the bond and choose to walk away, that's not how we're to live. We're called to be obedient to God. Another thing that science tells us is that when a woman has a sexual relationship with a man, a hormone is released within her, then an attachment. She attaches to that man that she's with. And as near as we can tell, there is no corresponding emotional hormonal reaction in men. Women have the reaction, and as far as we can tell, men don't. Which may be why it is that men are more promiscuous than women. But I ask you this. If you were a man of God and you were about ready to have sex with a woman and you realized that in having sex with that woman was going to build an attachment to you that she would carry with her for the rest of her life, would you follow through on that? For your own pleasure. What it means to be a man is to look over the weak. What it means to be a man is to look over the family. What it means to be a man is to look out for women. look out for those in our church and to look out for those in our country. Tomorrow, I'm going to talk about the state of the world in which we find ourselves. I think it's the case that the world would like to lull us to sleep. There's nothing that Satan would like better than to neuter us. There's nothing that Satan would like better than to disempower us. And the reason he'd like to disempower us is because the reality is that power is the currency of this world. And if he can disarm the men of God, he can pretty much do what he wants. So tomorrow we're going to be spending some time thinking about the way of the world. And then we're going to be thinking about the way that God has asked us to work with him to make the world. And when we leave here tomorrow, Lord willing, we will be able to leave not with guilt. Be able to leave not with a sense that we don't measure up, but we'll be able to leave with a sense that we understand the world in which we are in, we understand what God has asked us to do, and we are willing to link arms with each other and do it. And that when we leave here tomorrow, our God will not be money, our God will not be sexuality, our God will not be personal pleasure, our God will not be all of the distractions that we can find ourselves, our God will not be the seduction of somebody who will become attached to us the rest of our lives, our God will be the Lord our God. And that we will be his men and be faithful. And we will prevail, not because of our own strength, but we will prevail because the Lord our God is the God of this earth, who intends and wishes to use us to make this world, his world, a safe place and a just place for all of his children. So let's take a time of prayer. And I have no idea what time it is, which is why I'm a college professor. And if the sponsors deem that it's okay to ask questions, I'm fine. We'll see whatever Alan, who is in charge, says.